dark energy or dark matter, both in fact, as gravitational effects due to non-linearities in the Lagrangian, rather than some exotic kind of matter. I'll go just to the technical, let's say, mathematical part of the discussion, namely to show which is the framework in which one can work, and I'll just grasp the fact that what we are going to say, of course, has to be tested with the data coming from various levels in the universe, solar system tests, rotation of galaxies, WMAP, and extragalactic and even cosmological parameters. And apparently the final outcome is that tuning in an appropriate way the Lagrangian, one can certainly reproduce, I would say, most, if not all, effects which have been observed up to now without resorting to strange exotic kinds of matter. It's a long story, as you see from the list of people there. In fact, this, let me discuss first the historical basis. There are three historical periods in this research we are doing in the Department of Mathematical Physics in the University of Torino, and there is an international collaboration on that. The first work was done in 1978. It was, in fact, the thesis by Dr. Magnano, who is quoted in the list there. It was directed by me and Marco Ferraris. And that was a thesis devoted to investigating in greater detail, especially quadratic theories of gravity, but in general non-linear theories of gravity. But by non-linear we mean theories in which the Lagrangian is a Lagrangian depending on non-linear invariance of the curvature. So it's more complicated than the unique and only linear Lagrangian existing, which is the standard one of Hilbert and Einstein, or Hilbert Palatini, working in a so-called first-order form, depending whether one wants to have just a theory depending on a metric, and then it is a second-order theory, depends on derivatives up to order 2 of the metric, the curvature, or if one prefers to have a kind of a gauge metric formalism in which one has a metric and a linear connection as independent variables, and this is called first-order formalism, or improperly called also Palatini formalism. One can treat gravity in both ways. It is known that in pure gravity, the two treatments give identical results. They don't give identical results for nonlinear Lagrangians, and if one works with nonlinear Lagrangian, then either a kind of a biometric structure or the appearance of scalar fields is related to nonlinear. This was also known to Stelle in 78. He was trying to quantize gravity starting from quadratic Lagrangians, and then there is a bunch of papers in this period. At that time, there was no idea that these things could be helpful and interesting for applications to cosmology. So it was kind of a mathematical exercise, and things stopped there. I'm speaking of this period of more or less the early 80s. Then later on, we were working with Professor Volovich, he's an academician of the Steklov Institute of the Academy of Sciences in USSR. Now he's mainly working in quantum computing, but at that time we were working together on gravitational theories, and together with him and with also Professor Borowicz from the University of Wrocław, Poland, we realized that in the so-called nonlinear frame, namely when one has Lagrangians which depend in a nonlinear way on curvature, still the structure of Einstein equation is mostly preserved in the sense that the field equations that come out of a variation of a nonlinear Lagrangian, depending on a metric and a connection possibly, are mostly, by mostly I mean in generic situations, are in a sense equivalent to Einstein equations, provided one agrees to change the metric. Namely, if one agrees that the metric which is embedded from the beginning in the Lagrangian might not be the correct metric, and then one changes the metric, usually in a conformal way, but in any case there is a linear transformation from the old metric to the new one. If the transformation is conformal, of course, one does not change even the causal structure of space-time, and this is the most likely case, and we'll see it. But mostly, generically speaking, one is mostly working with Einstein equations, even if the equations look like being very different. Which means that a number of solutions, namely the most important ones, suppose Friedman, Robertson, Wolfer, or the Sitter solution, I'm not speaking of the cost, it's the solution of everything, of course, but most of the non-solutions of Einstein equations are also solutions of more complicated gravitational theories in which the Lagrangian is no longer needed. Then finally, recently, and I'm speaking of this further works with the other people listed in the in this list of names, I mean Professor Vintsov, who is working on perturbation techniques on linear and quadratic Lagrangians. He wrote a book on perturbative techniques in quantum gravity with Buchbinder. He is from Tomsk, but works also in Barcelona with the group of Zalde in cosmology. And then Capozziello, who is a theoretical cosmologist working in the University of Naples. And in particular, with Capozziello, we are writing a review article for a special number of the GRG journal, which is going to be hopefully ready for May, June this year. It will be a special volume of GRG journal devoted to all possible aspects of dark matter and dark energy theories. So there will be experimental evidence, theoretical ideas about dark energy, tests and so on, and one of the articles will be devoted to alternative ways of looking to dark energy as an outcome of the gravitational side of matter rather than the physical side of matter. Okay, so that's long but hopefully clear-cut introduction to the subject. So where does everything come from? From the point that everybody in this audience knows very well, that the universe, even if we assume that there has been a Big Bang at the beginning of the story of the universe, and then we see the standard expansion of the universe, and then we correct it by some quantum ideas in the first seconds, few seconds of the life, by an inflationary period, then in any case we cannot explain a number of things existing in the universe, in particular the fact that it is suffering an acceleration which in principle is incompatible with Einstein equations plus standard matter. And there are a lot of evidences, these are a little bit dated, but they have been improved by more recent data later on, but there are the 1A-type supernovae results. There is the cosmic microwave background, which gives indications about acceleration of the universe, and then there is also a number of indications coming from the large-scale structure of space-time itself. And they have given rise to the need of theoretical models for explaining and understanding this cosmological acceleration. The standard cosmological models are mostly based with all the necessary changements due to more data we have, but on the basis of so-called Friedman-Robertson model, Friedman-Robertson-Walker models of the universe, which are deduced historically, starting from the cosmological principle and the assumption that gravity is governed by Einstein field equations. Einstein field equations will be written in this way. There is a metric G. You calculate the Riemann tensor out of it. Out of it, you calculate the Ricci tensor, and out of the Ricci tensor, the Einstein tensor, which is assumed to be proportional to the sources which drive the gravitational forces. And in the standard cosmological model, one assumes that the matter existing in the universe, maybe there is more matter, of course, there is electromagnetism or something else, but the matter of the concrete matter is a kind of a fluid, and then we know that it is mostly homogeneous and isotropic, at least in the average, and this matter is distributed according to a perfect fluid stress tensor, in which rho is the density of matter, p is the pressure, and there is a fluid vector which gives commoving lines, references, privileged in the universe. And starting from Einstein equations and assuming that the matter has the form of a stress energy tensor of a perfect fluid, one gets among the solutions the standard Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric, this one. K is the curvature of the three-dimensional space-like sections of this universe, which has cosmic time. And K, of course, if K is positive, one has closed universes. If K is zero, there are flat sections. The topology of the space section is a sphere, is a plane. And if K is negative, on the contrary, then we have open universe with hyperbolic structure in the three-dimensional sections, a constant negative curvature. And out of the Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric, one gets inserting things into the Einstein equation, an equation which governs the derivative in A is just a function of time. The derivative of A with respect to time, which is indicated here by A dot, and in fact there is this equation, A dot squared over A squared equal essentially the density of matter minus something which depends on K over A squared. And that's from this equation one sees that the sign of K is crucial, because things change drastically if K is zero, namely if the curve is not present, or if K is positive or negative, because in that case it adds or deducts from the density of matter. And there is a different behavior, and H is called the Hubble parameter, and one gets out of it as a first result that in standard Einstein relativity with Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric, this equation, which is also can also be called Friedman-Hubble equation, one gets the value, the theoretical value of the Hubble constant, which tells us that if the universe is in the standard situation like this, which is not in fact according to more recent observations, there is just a rate of expansion given by H. Then one can assume state equations. And for example, there is a one can write the things in this way. One can write P like W times rho, and rho equal eta times this. I should have a pointer somewhere here. Yes. In this way, one expresses P and rho in this way, and then it introduces the extra parameter W, which can take several values. In particular, if W is minus one, it is the case of pure vacuum. There is no extra matter contribution. If W is zero, this is the case of pure dust. And if W is 1/3, this is the radiation-dominated universe. And in particular, if for simplicity we assume that the space-like section of space-time are flat, namely k equal to zero, then one can also integrate this equation to, one can also integrate it in a more complicated situation, but this is the simplest case. And that's the expansion factor A of t, which turns out to be a constant depending on the parameters one has here, times this inverse power in time. And in the standard model, one can calculate, one can compare this with also with data coming from experiments, and introduce what is called the deceleration parameter, q, there will be a definition of it in a further slide. And when W is either dust or radiation in these two cases, this deceleration parameter turns out to be positive. And the value of omega, which is which will be called the effective value of W, is assumed to be, is found to be larger than minus one. But indications of a few years ago, the first data we had from satellites and also some indications we have on ground experiments, tell us that the deceleration parameter, instead of being positive, as one gets from Einstein equations and Friedman equations, instead of being positive, it is negative, which has to do with an expansion and an acceleration of the universe. And that the effective value of W is in between minus 1.45 and minus 0.74. Probably the most recent data changed a little bit these brackets, but still the range is more or less this. The data are continuously changing because of flowing of data coming from the space missions and telescopes and radio telescopes working on the ground. Okay, so the idea is that one has to modify cosmology, standard Friedman-Robertson-Walker cosmology. And of course, there are two ways of doing it. So one has these equations, curvature, namely the gravitational part of the story, is tuned up by matter, T mu nu. And then the standard way of doing it is to change the matter side of the universe. Namely, there is some effect that we cannot control using Einstein equations with standard matter, and then we stick with Einstein equations because, in a sense, we believe they are God-given somehow, and then we change the matter side of the universe in order to have more matter giving indications, theoretical indications, how to obtain from a theoretical model something which fits well with the data that we are observing in the universe. And then, there is, as everybody knows, looking at the universe, more than 70% of the matter content, we, in a sense, we see in order to have the good behavior, provided Einstein equations are given. More or less 70% of the matter has to be inserted from outside as real matter, namely clustered forms of matter, or what is called dark energy, namely unclustered forms of matter. And one may even insert cosmological constant in the structure. And one may even think that the cosmological constant, in fact, is not a constant, but, for example, is varying at least in time, namely the universe is in space-like sections is isotropic and homogeneous, but the cosmological constant is assumed to be able to change during the time evolution. Then there are other, of course, other is not enough. One cannot reproduce the whole content of dark energy and dark matter in the universe just by adding a cosmological constant, even if varying. And then there is a number of further models. I lost the number, but there are probably more than 30 theoretical models for the description of this dark side of the universe. Among them, the most popular ones are even either the addition of a number of stellar fields to the structure or more exotic fields like Chaplygin gas or phantom fields or more strangely exotic matter with negative pressure And finally, theories just constructed out of phenomenological data. One has the phenomenological data and then try to insert them abruptly by hand into the matter side of the theory. I'm not saying that these results are wrong. What is clear is that there is no definite and ultimate answer using these. It also passes through the relatively still unknown problem of which is the real mass of the neutrinos existing in the universe. Although, even if this is a very interesting way of looking at the problem from, let's say, a phenomenological physical viewpoint, still it is unclear how to use these particular models of exotic matter to correctly describe the dark side of the universe, namely that part of the universe which, being seen as matter, refuses to be treated by equations of striking simplicity, as Einstein equations are. That is not so popular, in fact, because people is like to be stick to Einstein equations, since they have resisted for so many years to a lot of attacks, and they are very simple, Einstein equations. Even if it is not very popular, there is also another way of looking at the problem, of course. If one has these equations, it means one knows that on one side there is the curvature, which has to do with gravitation, and on the other side there is the matter, which is described by a stress tension. Of course, one is free to change the matter side of the equations, but in fact one is not forbidden to change the gravitational side. And in fact, even Einstein the first in his life was thinking to change the structure of gravitational equations, relying on more complicated Lagrangians than the linear Lagrangian of Hilbert and himself, namely the scalar curvature. Historically speaking, this came from different issues. They were trying to get a unified theory of gravity and electromagnetism. So there was a lot of work in this direction in the years between 1920 and 1950. Einstein, Weyl, Schrödinger, Eddington, many of the important physicists of the classical side of physics at that time were working in alternative formulations of gravity, which were abandoned for a number of reasons. First, of course, they are more complicated than the standard theory of relativity of Einstein, because they rely on more complicated Lagrangians and on more complicated field equations on the gravity side. And secondly, because there was no evidence with the experiments of that time that it was somehow necessary to change the gravitational side. But this was at that time, because now we know that equations do not work in this form. And so, even if it is simpler and easier, in a sense, to change the energy side of the equations, we, and not only we, because other people have been working in this direction, I'm quoting some of the most important issues in this direction. There was earlier work by Starobinsky, in which was the first explanation of inflation using a Lagrangian which is not linear. But Starobinsky was using the Lagrangian r times logarithm of r. And using this nonlinear Lagrangian, he was able to reproduce inflation of the universe. Then recently there was work by Capozzello, and we have been working together with him, and recently also Carol Duvuri and people working with English or Russian school has begun thinking again of having gravitational effects to drive the dark aspects of the universe, rather than trying to add matter as something which is exotic and not known. And why now alternative gravitational theories, in a sense, became again popular, and they are not so strange with respect to the years in between 1950, when, in a sense, after the death of Einstein and the stop working of Schrödinger and Eddington on this subject, and the uprise of Gauss theories, theoretical physicists forgot about non-linear theories of gravitation, and just very few things happened in the time being. But there is some work even in the period in between. There is, for example, there is the work by the School of Lanczos and people working on quadratic and more complicated theories depending on the curvature, Bucht and Lagrangians. They, in fact, have to do with Chern Simons' formulations of gravity. And there is a global Lagrangian which is now used by people working in black hole theories and the relations of these theories with the strings in particular. Then Higgs wrote, the same Higgs of the bosons, wrote a practically unknown paper in the 60s, which was published in Novocimento, in which he was studying what happens with the power Lagrangians in the curvature. So people were from time to time thinking about it, but more like a joke, just spend some time of our life working on this and then forget it, kind of a mathematical joke. Now it's no longer so, because the need of working with Lagrangians, which are not linear in curvature, come from the new issues of physics. If one tries to quantize gravity in a perturbative way, one realizes that the effective action, if any, of quantum gravity and the effective action of quantum cosmology cannot contain only linear terms in the curvature. It should contain also tails with nonlinear effects, tails which are quadratic and cubic and so on in the curvature. And this is the same if one tries to understand gravity not as a fundamental field theory, but rather as the low limit with low energy limit of strings or brain worlds. So there are, let's say, stringy and supergravity issues which tell us that it's too restrictive to work with a linear Lagrangian, and there are quantum reasons which tell us that it is too restrictive to work with a linear Lagrangian, so why not try to see what happens if we change the gravitational side rather than the dark energy side. And that, in a sense, tells us that after 100 years, after the formulation of Einstein equations, which are extremely simple because they come out from the simplest existing Lagrangian in curvature, we still do not understand enough what is gravity at large scales. We know that we don't understand enough what is gravity at small scales, otherwise we already would have a consistent theory of quantum gravity, and we still have not a consistent theory of quantum gravity. But even at the level of large scale structures, solar systems, galaxies, galaxy clusters, and cosmology, even in that case, we don't understand enough what gravity is. So one possible idea is to work with nonlinear Lagrangians in the curvature and to see what happens working with them at a purely classical level and maybe later on trying to quantize them. The simplest case, of course, is a theory which depends on a, which is governed by a Lagrangian, which is nonlinear in the simplest invariant one can construct, which is the scalar of the method. Then one can also work with theories in which nonlinearities are more complicated. Namely, there are nonlinearities depending on more complicated invariants, for example, the square of the Ricci tensor, the square of the Riemann tensor, or even more complicated objects. So the simplest case is a theory which is nonlinear in R. One may even think that this function, okay, it's not necessary that the function is an analytic function of R, but assume for simplicity that the function is an analytic function of R. Then one can expand it in powers of R, and then the first term of the expansion of f of R will be just Hilbert Lagrangian, the linear term. And then there will be corrections to this Lagrangian, with, of course, with coupling constants, which are those objects which come from the Taylor expansion of the Lagrangian. And these additional terms, there will be a quadratic term, a cubic term, and so on, will have to do with effects of gravity at different scales. Suppose you have a theory, and then one may even think of having something which is not analytic enough, but might be expandable, for example, in powers of R and the inverse of R. Of course, one has to go away from R equals zero, which is a singular case. R identically zero is a singular case. At the very end, it can be zero, of course, due to field equations, but it's not zero by definition. So one can expand it in powers of R and 1 over R. And a simpler toy Lagrangian has been tested and looked into the literature. It's not a good Lagrangian, in fact, but R plus 1 over R has two terms in it. One dominates when R is big, because in that case 1 over R is small. So there is a term which dominates for large curvature, and that's the inverse part. But when R is small, the 1 over R term dominates over the R, and then there is another part of the evolution of the universe in which the inverse part in the curvature dominates over the R. So this has been tested in literature. Okay, so what happens if one has a theory of this kind? Okay, the action functional consists, of course, of the gravitational part, which is a function of R, and then there is a matter part, the little standard matter. And then if one writes in the purely metric formulas, namely one is a metric, constructs the curvature out of this metric, and this is the first big problem of theories of this kind. They are not second order theories. They are fourth order ones. Field equations are of order 4. The only case in which they are order 2 is the case of linear dimension. In that case, f prime that you see there, this f prime, which enters this and this term, is 0. And then you get just the standard Einstein equations, because f of r is r.
You want f prime to be a constant.
Yes.
F prime is 0, then.
Sorry?
You want f prime to be constant.
If f of r
zero,
is r,
f has no r.
If the f of r is r,
yeah.
F prime is 1, and then this is 1 in front of the Ricci tensor. This is r, so this is Einstein tensor, and the rest is 0 because of the second derivatives of f prime, which is a constant, which is 1. Okay, sorry if I told 0 was a misspelling. And these are the equations that one gets from varying these Lagrangian with respect to G. So they are fourth order equations, and they are complicated, of course. These terms have contained third and fourth order derivatives of the metric.
There could be more, right?
If the Lagrangian is more complicated,
it's at least fourth order, could be worse.
No, this is fourth order. But if one takes invariants of this kind, if one takes invariants of the first three kinds, namely the functions of the curvature, or the Ricci squared, or the Riemann squared, then it is fourth order.
Yeah, all right. Yes.
But if you try to take some terms of this kind,
yeah.
If you take a block, for example, gives you fourth order. If you take second block, gives you sixth order.
Sure.
And so on.
No.
So in principle, one may even think of higher order gravity with as many derivatives of the metric one wants to take into account. From a mathematical viewpoint, there is no such gain in working with fourth rather than arbitrary order. But if one works with this kind of gravity, this is still bad because it is fourth order, but remains fourth order. Okay. So this is the higher order part, which in this case is fourth order. And then there are problems, of course. This is the toy Lagrangian I was telling you before. Assume, for example, that f of r is just linear in r plus something which is linear in r inverse with a coupling constant a. In this case, one gets W effective smaller than 1, and one obtains Q negative. So this toy Lagrangian is already enough to explain acceleration and to give the effective values of W. This was investigated independently by Capozziello and Carroll. And there is Newtonian limiting current in this theory. There is a misunderstanding in the literature that people believe that the Newtonian limit of nonlinear gravity is impossible, that the Newtonian limit is properly obtained only if the Lagrangian is linear enough. This is not true. One can write post-Newtonian approximations also of more complicated theories. There are singular cases. The quadratic case, for example, is singular. But with more complicated Lagrangian, one can obtain good Newtonian limits. And then there is also a nice fitting with supernova data of this Lagrangian. Unfortunately, this is not the correct Lagrangian, because there are things which do not work. This is incompatible with the solar systems test, and this Lagrangian has instability problems. And again, there is the idea that all nonlinear Lagrangians are unstable, but this is not true. This depends on the form of the Lagrangian.
When you say compatible with solar system data,
that gives different theoretical predictions.
But if I choose A, I mean, you're not saying what A is. If I choose A, can you define as a linear? That is compatible.
If you take A very small.
Yes.
In a sense, yes.
But it may mean that if you want to fit the supernova data, you can.
Yeah.
Solar system compatibility.
The range, you see, the range in which the Newtonian limit is recovered, the range in which you have a nice fitting with supernova, and the range in which you are compatible with solar systems do not intersect in this sense. Yeah. But then the idea is to choose, the very end of the idea will be, let's try, and we are working on this, to tune up the structure of F of R so that all these things are at least valid in a tiny range, and then check it all together, and then check it against data coming from the universe. And we have indications that there are possible Lagrangians, non-linear, non-quadratic, much more complicated than quadratic Lagrangians, which of course, in certain regimes, reduced to Hilbert, namely there is a leading term which is Hilbert, and then there are additional terms which have to be tested, and then apparently it's possible to reproduce most of these things suitably choosing their terms.
But you're restricting attention to f of r where r is which is k.
We are also working on quadratic things. Theories depending on the quadratic invariants. Theories depending also on R-square. And also on Riemann square, but there are more problems. So let me just tell you the theoretical side. First of all, one can work, as I told you, the first idea would be to work in a purely metric case, but one can also work in first order form. If namely assume that the connection and the metric are given independently. In this case, things change a little bit, because one, of course, has two field equations. One field equations come from varying the metric, and it is the equation written over there. And then there is a field equation coming from varying the connection independently. The connection is torsionless in this case. Then, of course, this equation is complicated, the second equation, but if the function f is assumed to be analytic, they have, of course, let me just discuss this. They are second-order field equations, because they are simple. In a sense, this is a kind of Hamiltonian formalism for the theory, in which the metric and the connection take the role of conjugate variables. One can even either take the metric G as a dynamical variable and gamma as a momentum, but one can also make a Legrand transformation and take gamma as variable and G as momentum. It's possible. They are canonically conjugated with respect to Hamiltonian structure in field space. But they are second order. So there are two equations of order 2 rather than one equation of order 4. So in a sense, nothing new, but they are simpler to be treated. Because one can immediately realize from the second equation that one can introduce a new metric which is conformally related to the previous one. The conformal factor, though, is complicated form, because it is in fact the first derivative of the Lagrangian, but it can be assumed to be a kind of scalar. And then, if one uses this metric H, the second equation, taking into account the fact that gamma is torsionless, solves to tell us that the connection gamma is obliged to be the Levi-Civita connection of H. So it is a purely metric theory, in a sense, but the metric is another one. It's not the original metric entering the Lagrangian, but it is a metric conformally related to the metric entering the Lagrangian, as the conformal factor contains the nonlinearities. If the theory is linear, then f prime of r is 1, and then h is equal to g. If the theory is nonlinear, then h is conformal to g, there is no change in the causal structure, but the theory behaves as a theory in which there is a metric and a conformal field, a scalar field, and these two equations together, in fact, are transformed into Einstein equations for H, plus Klein-Gordon equations for the scalar, in which the potential is complicated, but it is calculated analytically out of the formula. That's the idea.
So
in a sense, this is equivalent.
So what is the scalar here? F prime of R, I mean, F is fixed from the start. F cannot be the scalar.
So
what is the scalar field? How do you identify that scalar field?
Okay, let me be more precise. In the metric formalism, so in a sense, if you take the constraint that you want gamma to be the Levi-Civita connection of G, then it is a constant. And then it has the role of a cosmological constant. But if the theory is purely metric, then the equations are the one that we wrote before. So this is what you see from the Palatini structure. I was not, sorry, it is my fault, I have not been clear enough. I've been rushing too much. This is the structure of these equations that you see from the Palatini formulas, which in a sense, it is the Hamiltonian framework. But then, in the purely metric formulas, and the equations are fourth order, these two equations, in fact, are not separated because there is just one variable. So these, in a sense, are the equivalent Hamiltonian counterpart of the only Lagrangian equation that you have in G. So this is just a structural viewpoint. Then if you look at it, you understand that H has to be conformal to G. And in fact, this is true also in the purely metric case. So if one comes back to this case, in which it is just purely metric, second order theory, these are the fourth order equations. But then, if one assumes a new metric H to be F prime of L times G, and tries to plug in into these equations, by a Legendre transformation, because that's the idea, that is the Hamiltonian structure, by a Legendre transformation, these fourth order equations are turned into a pair of second order equations, one for H and one for F prime of R, which is a function. And F prime of R is a scalar, of course, and it behaves according to a Klein-Gordon equation with a nonlinear potential. And in the new metric H, these are Einstein equations, with the stress tensor coming out of this scalar that you construct out of the curve.
So you're changing philosophy here, you're not...
Yes, this is in the metric case.
So,
this is what happens in the metric case. But now, let's come to the... And this is the old story. This was first seen by Higgs for quadratic theories. Then was realized by Buchner in particular cases, and then was proven to be always true for all nonlinear Lagrangian by Magnano under my supervision in 1987. So this theory, even if it is fourth order, in fact is Einstein's theory coming from it, in a new metric. And this was later rediscovered in recent years by the school of Karp. They rediscovered it, this conformal transformation.
So the point is, can you go ahead to
the next? You will see it later.
All right.
There will be a slide for this.
Right.
But the claim is that these fourth order equations, written in terms of G and phi scalar field equal to F prime of L are isolated and ordered.
Yeah, that was my question.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. But this comes from the Hamiltonian structure, so let's go out. Let's go ahead. So this is the pure metric side. But this interpretation of the pure metric side, which in fact is earlier than what I am going to say, has to do with the Hamiltonian structure. And the Hamiltonian structure is this one. You work in a first order, already first order, in which G is Q and gamma is P. Configuration and momentum. And if you work in this scheme, which is the first order scheme, improperly called parathetic, it is improper the name, but, and there are a lot of work done in these directions, Bolli, Flanagan, Maeda. Flanagan was given the Xanthopoulos Prize for his work on these theories. In fact, okay, I'm not making any polemics about it. The results of Flanagan are just a rediscovery of what we have done about 20 years ago. But people forgot about it, because it was just a mathematical game. Okay, the idea is that if one writes these two equations, in the really Hamiltonian side of the story, then there is no conformal field, because the conformal field is obliged to be a constant. And look why. So if one looks at it, there is this conformal metric, H, and the second equation tells us that the connection gamma is the Levi-Civita connection of this conformal metric. And this is what was discovered by Higgs for the quadratic Lagrangians. And in a sense, this was hidden in the work of Magnano and myself on the purely metric side. And this is what has been done by people working in Palatini formalism for nonlinear Lagrangians in earlier times. They were using the conformal factor. But look what happens. The first equation can be traced. If one traces the first equation, one gets an algebraic relation over the function f, which tells us that f prime of r times r minus 2f should be proportional to the trace of the stress tensor of matter. That for a fluid is 3p minus rho. That's the trace of the stress tensor for a fluid. That tells us why p equal 1/3 of rho is a very exceptional case. In that case, the trace is zero. But if there is no matter, namely if we are in vacuum, then tau is zero. And if tau is zero, this equation, f prime of r times r minus 2f equals zero, is an equation involving an analytic function. So it controls the values which the curvature can take at the zeros of this analytic function. If it is a polynomial, they're just a finite number, even. They don't calculate them.
When tau is zero, f is r squared. That's all.
No. If tau is zero, f is not that close.
Why not?
No.
F prime would be 2r.
No.
2r squared minus 2r squared is zero.
But this is not an equation for r, it's an equation for g.
Well.
No, it's an equation for g.
I'm saying that's if tau is zero, no, we take f to r, that, r squared,
no,
we get zero,
we no,
equals zero.
No, this is, right? This is the r equal, sorry, r, f equal r squared,
yeah,
is the only case in which this equation is 0 equal to 0.
Yeah.
And tells nothing. But if the function f is not r squared, that's why I told you that
r
squared is the
squared, then you'll constrain the metric.
Okay. So, if, yes, that's the point. If the, that's why the, like, people were working with quadratic Lagrangians, and they were saying that nonlinear theories are meaningless, of course, because it is meaningless, this equation is 0 equals 0. But if the Lagrangian is not quadratic, then this equation is not meaningless. It's the trace of a dynamical equation, and it is an equation on one of the gravitational degrees of freedom carried by G. And then you use it And then you plug it back into the other equation. And finally, you realize that these two equations together are Einstein equations with the cosmological constant, which is quantized. And the quantized values of the cosmological constants are, in fact, the zeros of this equation. Among which there might be lambda equals zero, but also other values of lambda. And many more, if there are many more zeros. So much more complicated is the behavior of this nonlinear function of the curvature, and many more possible values of the cosmological constants are allowed. That's the idea. And this is the result we had with Borovitch and Borovitch in the recent past. Then one can also work in a more general case, and then one can forget about this, that which will tell us that R will be a constant if the trace of the stress tensor is not a constant. Then one uses implicit function theorem to assume that the equation is solvable, and then in that case, the constraint will not be R equal a constant, but it will be R equal a function of the trace of matter. Then one uses it, inserts it back, and then the metric is really conformally, but not homothetically related with the other one. So the conformal factor depends on the matter in that case. It's not a constant, it's no longer a constant. And then, using it, one realizes that there is a kind of generalized Einstein equations. However, the relation between the metric, the given metric, and the metric which is conformally related is a little bit more complicated. And in fact, the Ricci tensor of H turns out to be linear in the old metric. There is a 1-1 tensor which makes the transformation, P alpha mu, which is given over there. And in fact, if one checks it with the Friedman equation, then from there it comes the value of the deceleration parameter. Then if one uses this to check, assume, and there are many, assume one has a Lagrangian, nonlinear in the curvature, such that among the solutions of this field equation, there is Friedman-Robertson-Walker model, then it is a solution of these field equations, but the Friedman equations change. So one inserts it back into the equations and obtain a modification of Friedman equation in which there are two more terms, except the standard one, a prime over a squared. There is something coming from a b prime over 2b squared. I'll show you later where b comes from. B, in fact, is contained in the coefficients of p. And there is an extra term in the matter side, which contains the value of f calculated on the trace of the matter, plus kt, and still there is the piece in minus k over a squared. That should be probably, let me see if it is somewhere there. Okay, these are examples. Okay, so there will be some example later. So this is what happens if one works with this formula. What one obtains is that the theory either is equivalent to Einstein relativity with the conformal field, or if one works in the first order formula, it is really equivalent to relativity in case of no matter field or traceless matter field, and then it is equivalent to relativity plus a scalar if there is trace of the matter, and this can be used to tune up the value of the curvature, and in a sense it can be also later on tuned up to check which is the possible structure of the nonlinear function f to be compatible and fitable with experiments. That's the general idea. And issues have been told before that there are advantages of working in these palatine formulas. One can still decide working in the purely metric case, then there is, of course, a possibility of doing it, but we prefer working in the palatine form. Our works, in principle, consider both cases. We work both in the purely metric and in the first order form to check which one of the two methods give best fits according to different structures of the Lagrangian. But I personally believe that the Palatini formalism is a little bit more powerful than the purely metric formalism. So let me give you some ideas on how it's possible to test it with toy cosmological models. First idea, of course, this is not the correct solution, because pure power Lagrangians are not good enough. But if one uses a pure power Lagrangian, one takes a pure polynomial behavior of the Lagrangian, simplest case, of course, is R to a power, then the idea is that one has addition, linear addition of power terms, R squared plus R cubed plus R to the 25th, for example, with coupling constants in front of it. In the case of a pure power Lagrangian like this, and in that case, beta, of course, is just a rewriting of the of the Newton constant, then if one calculates with this Lagrangian the acceleration factor Q and the effective potential W, one gets this analytic structure of it. Q is 3 times 1 plus W minus 2n over 2n, n is the power. It's not assumed to be an integer, maybe a real power, and maybe a real number. So it includes other cases of interest, but assume for the moment that n is an integer number. And then W effective takes this form. And this gives, for specific values of n, for example, if the Lagrangian is a negative power, n is smaller than zero, or if the Lagrangian is over quadratic, n is at least 3/2, in that case, one gets omega effective smaller than minus 1. But this is not good for many other respects. So one can think of logarithmic Lagrangians. Starobinsky Lagrangian was in fact R times log of R. If one works with a logarithmic Lagrangian, then things are a little bit better. And for every time, namely for t near to the value of the Big Bang that one finds in this case, q is more or less 3 times w plus 1 minus 2, and the universe is decelerating. But in late times, the universe coming out of a logarithmic Lagrangian for t greater than Planck's time, then q, the acceleration factor, tends to be equal to minus 1, and then this means that there is an accelerating the theta behavior. Then one can, this was not invented by, this appears in literature somewhere, I don't remember, one can think, for example, of Dirac, which was can be found in the literature. So in this case, things are even better. H squared goes like 2 to the minus 1, and the omega effective is minus 2 minus W. I will skip about what we are working on, the case of Ricci squared, namely Lagrangians, which you were asking me before. Let me forget about it, otherwise the lecture will never end. So let me, I'll give you details. There is a number of papers published in FISREV on this, so I'll give you the indications later. So this is, this diagram comes from the first paper of this series. It's a series of three papers, which was published a couple of years ago in FISREV D. What happens if one works with a Ricci squared Lagrangian? S is Ricci squared. So if one works with the power of the square of the Ricci tensor, the simplest case, of course, is n equal to 1. Okay, then one can find the values of B and C, which is an outcome of P and A. These are the things which are, which in fact, B and C, in a sense, are the two things which enter the Friedmann equation. So one can calculate, then one can be calculated exactly, but the other, of course, is calculated approximately, first order approximation. And then if one looks at the structure of these objects and tries to change the value of n, realizes that there are good regions and forbidden regions in this space, in which we are plotting W in vertical against n in horizontal. So in horizontal is the power law which changes, with exceptional cases, of course, And in vertical, there is the value of W, which when calculated, which is calculated out of the Friedman equations. And then you see these gray or violet things that appear in phase space are good regions. So all the Lagrangians which stay into this part of the diagram are good for testing. And all those which are out of these are not good for testing because the range of W does not give W effective smaller than minus 1. So this reduces the space in which one can test it. And then, of course, other experiments will give other constraints. And the idea is that one each time reduces, slices phase space according to the choice of the Lagrangian, according to other experiments. And finally, if one is lucky enough, there will remain islands in which the Lagrangian can be chosen, and big islands, of course, in which the Lagrangian cannot be chosen to fit experiments. So this is a calculation that I was telling you how to get these results. That's the mathematical structure of what I was saying before. In fact, it is part of a more general structure. This is, in fact, was given as a lecture at the GRG conference in Dublin by Flanagan. You were there, right? So this is, in a sense, this is partly contained in the Flanagan lecture, award lecture of the Xanthopoulos Prize. And he did a lot of work in this direction, so I'm not saying that he did not work in this direction, but I remember well that Flanagan said explicitly that his construction was in fact a reformulation and workout of previous results that were obtained by my school with Magnano in Torino many years before, so that when they were not interesting for applications, but now they are interesting for applications. This is the most general framework. One can start from a Lagrangian, which is hyper-Lagrangian, coupled to a conformal factor in front of it, plus some macro terms coming from the scalar. And then these theories can be rewritten as alternative theories with a nonlinear Lagrangian. And there is a one-to-one transformation. Namely, each theory, which can be written this way, with a nonlinear Lagrangian in the curvature, as an equivalent rewriting in terms of a theory in which a metric G, which is conformally related with the previous one, enters the theory. The conformal factor is a function, is a function of space-time variables, and it is coupled in a minimal way as a factor in front, as a Dilaton factor in front of the curvature. And so the idea is that each theory of this kind, namely scalar tensor theory, with a conformal factor in front, plus nonlinear Klein-Gordon part, is equivalent, in fact, by the Lechaine transformation, to an alternative theory of gravity. Namely, you give me an alternative theory of gravity, and then I can transform it into a scalar tensor theory, or vice versa. You give me a scalar tensor theory written in a form like this, and then I can transform it back into a nonlinear theory of gravity. Then, of course, there are two metrics, and one has to choose which is the correct metric.
Is F only a function of the Ricci scalar, or can it be functions of Ricci?
No, no. In this case, it's just a function of the Ricci scalar. So the theorem tells that
so it doesn't have work if F is like R alpha beta, or some such thing.
No, it does not work in this case. In that case, if you try to make the Lechaine transformation, then you get an extra spin 2 field, which in fact is the Weyl tensor part of the Lagrangian. And this was discovered the first time by Stelle in the linearized frame. This famous paper by Stelle in 1987. Sure that if you take a Lagrangian which is nonlinear in the Riemann tensor, then you get two fields of spin 2 and one of spin 0, and of the fields, of the additional fields, one is a ghost. But that is true for quadratic Lagrangians. in general, it is no longer true, namely they may have good properties. And this was working with linearized equations. And the thesis of Magnano was, in fact, the idea to prove that it works at full nonlinear level, namely that it is not only an outcome of the linearized theory, but in fact, the linearized outcome is just the linearization of a full nonlinear transformation. But then was forgotten because there was no interest in this at that time.
But could it not be that if you were, if you allow yourself not just functions of which is scalar, but
yes,
arbitrary functions of arbitrary scalar?
But in fact, we are working with the more general case. This is the simplest.
In this more general case, could it not be that you could still reformulate, but you would introduce not just the scalar, you would also introduce, you know, spinors, vectors, tensors, and so on?
That's exactly the idea, because if one has a theory which is fully nonlinear in the Riemann curvature, then one can calculate the number of degrees of freedom. So there are more degrees of freedom than just those carried by the biometric. There are more than 10. Then they reduce by diffeomorphism invariance, but the crude counting gives more than 10. So they are not equivalent just to a metric. In f of r case, in a sense, they are irrelevant. The 10 components of the metric plus a scalar. So it is a spin 2 and a spin 0. If it is more complicated, the structure, namely, it's not a function of the linear concomitant of the curvature, which is R, but it is a function of Ricci squared or Riemann squared, then there are terms which come from the Vi part. And they have to do with spinors. Since these terms have to do with the Vi part, in fact, they have to do with the spinor content of the theory, and then you have extra terms. Then, if you add extra matter, of course, then it gives you coupling with other fields. But in principle, what you get is a metric, a scalar, and an object of spin 2, which is composed of two spins, because it is violent. That's the, you cannot get anything more complicated.
So, maybe that could be reformulated. If you think of the framework of induced gravity, we know that, right? We know that if you start with kind of curvature in curved space, yes, you induce all sorts of curvature terms in the action. And what you're saying is that some, at least the ones that are made out of the scalar, of the Ricci scalar, at least those could be avoided by introducing a new field.
Yes. Right? Yes. At least those.
Right. But it may be that all of it could be avoided.
Oh yeah.
But that would be the fact that we induce new questions.
Yeah, yeah, but for the moment, this is a classical example, for the moment. Then I don't know what, in fact, nobody knows what happens, because, as you know, Stelle was trying to do it, but quantizing these theories with quadratic, even just quadratic terms in the Riemann tensor is a mess. So there was some attempt of doing it using the Palatini, that's why people also have been thinking about Palatini formalism, because in the Palatini formalism, it is a little bit simpler to try to make a quantization in this way, because field equations are second order from the beginning, they have a kind of Hamiltonian structure from the very beginning. But then the problem is the quantization coming out of the connection. Because I know that if one tries to do it, there are problems with the Fadeyev-Popov determinant, it diverges somewhere.
But you see, this could create a nice opportunity.
Yeah.
We know it is very tough to quantize a gravity theory that would have even higher order terms in gravity,
yes,
right? But what we see here is that maybe we can avoid that. We can,
yeah, if
we do renormalization of a kind of feature in curved space, we could, instead of running into the higher order curvature terms, instead we just introduce new magnitudes, mm-hmm, whose renormalization we get rid of. I mean, we themselves produce,
yep,
curvature terms and the curvature terms that we had, and they just cancel them. So we do counter terms, not we make counter terms,
yeah,
out of
gravity,
but counter terms out of additional fields.
It's a very interesting idea. I never thought about working in it because I principally work in the quantum, in the classical. And I've been involved in understanding the classical structure. I had a guess that it might be interesting for quantization, and then you are giving me an interest. It's probably much more interesting than I was thinking about.
But of course, it hinges on the idea that, yeah, that you can actually do this not only for the Ricci scalar, but also.
You do it for the whole Lagrange, yeah, for the whole thing.
For arbitrary functions of contractions of the Riemann, if you you can do it for all of them, then it could be done.
I'll discuss it with Odilson. And if you have any idea, it would be very welcome. Okay, so this is the, I would say this is probably, there are still more things, forget about it. So this was the general scheme in the, just in the case of functions of the scalar curvature. There are kind of equivalent theorems of this kind, but of course they get more complicated structure. If the Lagrangian is not a function of the scalar curvature, but is a function of more complicated invariants, and then there are extra fields in too. We have been also working in Chersheim theory, for example. We have been working with, but these are simpler in a sense, because these quadratic terms are specific kinds of terms. They come from topological invariants, or let's say, variational trivial things. So these theories are simpler. If it is not a Chern-Simons invariant, then the theory is more complicated in its behavior. If it is just Chern-Simons, there is more or less nothing new with respect to standard gravity, although it's a different formulation. There are interesting differences if the dimension is even, of course, and, so in dimension 3, sorry, if the dimension is n plus 1, so if n is even, there are interesting cases, especially in the case n equal 3 or n equal 5, interesting specific cases. So, just to conclude, that's why we believe that alternative theories can provide, I'm not saying they do provide, but since people believe that they do not provide, we say they can provide an explanation of the current acceleration and other effects in the universe. In particular, they can provide an alternative explanation of dark matter and dark energy, seen rather than as an exotic matter effect, as an exotic gravitation effect. Something which comes from nonlinear terms in the Lagrange. And in fact, we have good hints that tuning the Lagrangian, I'll give you indications to more recent literature in which there are tables of data, and so I didn't want to bother you with these tables of data and so on. They appear in the literature that we wrote about it recently. But there are ways of choosing appropriately the values, the form of the function f of r to fit most of the experimental data which are not fitted by standard equations of Einstein plus standard matter. And that one can even try and decide to revert to first order formulas, since even if one is doubling, in a sense, the number of variables, on the other side is getting a better structure because it is already Hamiltonian from the beginning and simpler from the mathematical viewpoint. Of course, there are problems. The ultimate problem is that really, and that's exactly what you, in a sense, points in the direction that you were saying before. One should not just work at the purely theoretical level here and purely classical level, but one would like to have this, since in a sense the source of that, of all the story is this, one would like to have a quantization of this procedure, and one would like to know if models of this kind have really to do with some eventual and hopefully found, sooner or later, quantization scheme, coherent quantization scheme from gravity. And we don't know, but the idea you have seems to be rather interesting. And I thank you very much. This is a list of references relatively recent, and there is some still in progress, which is going to appear in 2007. It's not yet listed. Thank you.
I just noticed, I guess, reference 5. I mean, it seems to me what should be done, if it hasn't been done already, and it looks like reference 5 has done some of it, that somebody should survey the territory of at least these fourth order Lagrangians and ask what regions of parameter space are allowed when all observations are taken into account, solar system and binary pulsar and accelerating universe, supernova data, all that stuff. So has that been done?
Partly.
Yeah, part of it, but not completely.
Not completely.
So that's clearly a project that might as well be completed on the thing.
Yes, we are, this depends on, as far as we know, there is a number of data feed which are going well. What we are, for example, what we are proposing now, look, if you take an FOR theory, a theory in which Yoshimura nonlinear, and for simplicity, suppose you take something which deviates very little from the linear. So let me write on the blackboard. Is there any?
On the table.
Ah, yeah. But then just to write it. If one works with a Lagrangian of this kind, so it's more or less R. There is a small epsilon. So it is a little bit over linear. If one works with a Lagrangian of this kind, then one can realize the following, that this epsilon, in fact, gives a modulating factor in the gravitational waves. So you get gravitational waves more or less identical to the gravitational waves of Einstein equations, but this is a modulation of frequency. There is a letter published by Capozziello and me on this. And then what we are suggesting is that people working with gravitational waves in the experiment should try to see whether they are modulated and use the modulation factor to calculate the effective value of psi. This would be a crucial test.
Yeah.
If it works.
Well, a common problem of modifying Einstein's Lagrangian is that one tends to excite molds of the metric that are not just the quadrupole molds, but the dipole mold and the scalar mold. And that's the binary pulsar puts very tight constraints on the amount of energy lost that is not due to quadrupole radiation.
Yeah.
So it strikes me that's probably the most stringent test of these things, is that you're going to lose energy through dipole radiation if you mess up Einstein's Lagrangian.
Yeah.
But there's got to be some region of parameter space that allows it, but it might not be much.
Yeah.
But I think that'd be a tighter constraint than a modulated system.
Yes. No, you're right. But then these Lagrangians of this type, which have been treated in vitro, people is wondering what happens if the Lagrangian is a little bit different from R. So people have been thinking of R plus 1 over R with the polynomial, and so on. But look at this is a stupid remark. Look at this Lagrangian. We published it in our paper, of course. This is R,
it's R times 1 plus
R to the epsilon, and this is R times E to the epsilon log R. So this is R times log R. So this is Starobinsky Lagrangian in first approximation.
Well,
so that's why Starobinsky was effectively
using the leading term, it's R.
Oh, sorry, is R plus, so this is, of course, the zeroth order is this, but the first order is this. And then there is a tail in epsilon squared. So that's why Lagrangians of this kind have to do with inflation, because inflation is here.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying that if we believe that's the Lagrangian of gravity, the binary pulsar is going to constrain that parameter. That seems to me to be an acid test that has to be imposed on all of these things. But I'm a bit surprised, it seems that nobody's actually done it. It seems to me it should be done. But I don't have a good intuitive feeling for how.
But you see, because the quadrupole formula sticks very strongly on Einstein.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Probably
so
there is.
We'll
think about it, but it's not so easy to modify it. Because in a sense, this quadrupole formula comes from the linear structure of Einstein.
Yeah, but that's good.
So there should be an equivalent for a nonlinear theory of gravitation, but probably people have never done it because of the difficulty in calculation. But of course,
you are touching a
hot point. It has to be done. Probably we are not able to do it with our poor mathematics. One should probably need a strong analyst for doing that.
Blood, sweat, and tears, that would be my guess. The ratio of the three is not clear. Yeah. But the ratio of blood, sweat, to tears, I don't know.
We'll think about it. Okay.
So,
I'm leaving.